If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And today, we preview the Kings game tonight. Lakers are looking to avoid the season sweep in a really big game standing-wise. If the Lakers want to get out of that 9-10 game, it's a really big night. And it's been a challenge, right? Lakers have lost the previous three matchups to the Kings, two of which were some butt kickings. One as recently as about a week ago. And so today, we try to solve the riddle of the Kings, D. And I'd love to start on the defensive end. Right before the pod, you texted us and you were like, Lakers are 28th in defense over the last 10 games. And I think the defensive end has been central to their struggles against the Kings specifically, right? De'Aaron Fox had 32 points in the paint. Defensive rebounding is a huge issue. That's going to be something I harp on in this pod. But what are some of the top line things you think about with not just the Lakers defense in general, D, but tonight against the Kings?
Yeah, so the Kings, they're a challenging team, I think, for the Lakers to deal with. So I wrote a piece at Silver Screen and Roll that should be up right now. And I talked about the last five games that the Lakers have played to start the month, right? Which were all against sort of top level teams. And then a team like the Kings, who have given the Lakers a bunch of problems and who are also a playoff team. And the Lakers went 3-2. And the two games they lost were against the Nuggets and against the Kings. And the Kings and the Nuggets are on different tiers, obviously. But one of the things I highlighted is that they have certain ingredients that seem to give the Lakers problems, right? And it's not foreign big man.
Sure.
Well, it's a three-pronged thing, right? It's like the fact that their big guys are hubs of offense and that they're really good passers. Oh, yeah. And they're also both like physically strong and sturdy players that are good on, that are really good on the offensive glass. That's a thing. It's a fact that they both run five out offense that relies a lot on DHO actions and screen and roll actions that put the player who is defending that big man in a precarious position a lot of times. And it's the fact that both teams have at least one really dynamic scoring guard who has great chemistry with that big man. The Nuggets are obviously on a whole different level, but these ingredients that the Kings possess are a problem for the Lakers' defense. And solving it, I think, is going to require not just a tweak to what the game plan was in the last game against the Kings, but a bit of an overhaul and a much higher level of commitment to the scheme, I think. Now, how much of that is play harder? And like, I think that that's part of it too, but there was a commitment level that was clearly not there from the stretch that the Kings went on their run all the way through the rest of the game defensively, where Sacramento pretty much got what they wanted. And I'm super interested in how Anthony Davis gets deployed against the Kings in this game, because he is the type of guy who can be in two places at once. But against the Kings, it's very difficult to be in two places at once because the quickness and shiftiness of their guards and their scoring ability at all three levels, and the need to recover back to Sabonis, who is comfortable playing in a crowd and is super physical in establishing position. Those are opposite ends of the spectrum of what you need to be good at. And AD is one of the few players who is good at both, but I think he's fighting his instincts sometimes in playing against the Kings, and he ends up in no man's land a lot. And so deploying him, I think, is part one of how the Lakers are going to need to be better defensively against the Kings specifically.
First, just a quick general thought on the Lakers and the defense, and you would refer to where they are of late. I was listening to a couple different podcasts about how scoring and is down a little bit, like since the All-Star break, and people wondering if the NBA actually made a point of emphasis on it. And, you know, just the having gone from the peak of just all of the offense and the All-Star game and everything, and what's going on with the league, and is it even fair for defenses? And that hasn't been the case in Laker games, though. The scores have been up in the 120s for much of the time since the All-Star break. So I guess it's a bunch of the other teams in the league. Against the specific matchup with the Kings, and I was watching them play the Bucks last night, and there were some similar issues that the Lakers had on in terms of the Bucks not having lockdown perimeter players and Fox and Monk just getting to spots. And the system that Sacramento runs, which I think is more difficult to deal with on a random regular season night than when you've seen it a couple of times. And Milwaukee looked just as perplexed as the Lakers did. And then I've seen some other teams play Sacramento recently who aren't even really good teams and, you know, were just locked in and didn't have nearly as much trouble, where the Kings can lose at home to like the Bulls and the Pistons on the same times that they're kicking the snot out of certain teams like Milwaukee. So, Pete, to get into the specifics as to what an adjustment could be, I wondered what you saw in the first quarter. Like, what was difference about the first 10 minutes with AD on the floor where the Lakers went up by 19? And then what changed from there? And how reductive is it to just say, well, it wasn't working when AD was in the drop, so why don't you just get him up to the level of the screen more? Up challenging and being aggressive and not letting Fox get down there, even if that means Sabonis is going to get some more stuff around the rim, or it's just a more specific like, hey, LeBron, Rui, this rotation has to happen, and one of you is responsible for keeping him out of there when AD is up, and like why is that something that can't be done or it wasn't done, and what do you think about that heading into tonight's game?
So, Mike, I want to put the AD pick and roll conversation, just kick it maybe to the next segment, because that's a whole conversation. I'd love to talk out the specifics of that, because, yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road in the half-court defense. But in terms of why I thought the game flipped, we always look at it, of course, from a Lakers perspective, and certainly an influence, but when their personnel go from Kevin Huerter and Harrison Barnes, strictly from a foot speed perspective, to Trey Lyles in that front court spot, who's a guy who's going to run fast, plays hard, and then Malik Monk in the backcourt, talk about a guy who's fast and plays hard. Malik, for me, is a top five most entertaining guy to watch in the NBA on a night-to-night basis. I love watching him hoop, and last night was no different, right? And they actively hunt out, you add in Davion Mitchell and even Keon Ellis to this as well, and overall it becomes a foot speed thing, right? We talk about the, hey, you got Mike Conley guarding Rui because you ran out of guys. That's not going to work. Well, a lot of times for us in those backcourt positions defensively, it's like you're going to run out of guys, and it's D'Lo or Austin having to keep up with De'Aaron Fox, for example, or Malik Monk, and there being somewhat of a foot speed issue in that respect. And the Kings, watching their game last night against Milwaukee, they really seek that out. I was watching Milwaukee going, aside from Giannis and Andre Jackson Jr., who hit his face on the rim on a putback at the end of the game, but he's not in the rotation. But aside from Giannis, who's their next and third most athletic guy on that team? And you compare that to the second or third most athletic guy on most teams, it's nowhere close. I think the Kings really sniff that out, D. And that's from Fox all the way through Sabonis. And the fact that they are fast, like Sabonis, I want to get into his ball handling a little bit, because I think that in the half court, that's a super important thing. But just the transition game. First, we can't throw the ball all over the gym against their ball pressure. Their ball pressure was really good in those more athletic groups. We talk about the offensive end with them, but they were putting great ball pressure on us, great ball denial, turning us over. And then you get Fox and Monk and guys like that out in transition, good luck, right? And so talk to me about that aspect of the game, D, the speed aspect of this and how we can help mitigate that.
I'm glad you brought up their defensive ball pressure and how speed and quickness isn't just an offense thing, it's a defense thing as well. And one of the things that smaller teams want to do, and Oklahoma City tries to do this to the Lakers as well, mm-hmm. is they swarm passing lanes and they get super aggressive at the point of attack. And like, oh, you want to play through Anthony Davis? Well, great. We're going to front the post and then we're going to sit in the key on the backside and we're going to jump in and out of the paint and we're going to like test the refs even to say like, go ahead, call defensive 3 seconds every single time. Let's see if you do. And when the ball is in the air over the top of the front, like we're rushing in and then we're swarming. And that idea of speeding a team up is what you have to do as a smaller team that doesn't have a lot of rim protection, right? And so Oklahoma City does have rim protection in Chet, but the Kings do not. Personally, I'd like to see the Lakers be faster on their own rather than trying to be fast in response to the pressure that the Kings are putting on them, right? And there's a difference in terms of controlling your own movement. So, for example, like, I'd love to see the Lakers push against ball pressure. Like, oh, you want to pressure me? Well, then I'm going to speed up and make you run with me. And if you want to run with me, well, then fine. Then you're going to have to change direction quickly. And everyone is going to have to be on the same page. I'd set a couple of backcourt screens, right? Like, I just try to free the game up a little bit rather than saying we're just going to continue to try to be as methodical as we can, because the Lakers can be an excellent transition team too. And Mike, part of how the Lakers got their 19-point lead is that they were getting out in transition. They were forcing misses. They were then rebounding and running. They had gotten a couple of turnovers themselves. Rui had that great weak side steal where the Lakers were pressuring the ball. Sacramento tries to throw a skip pass, and there goes Rui jumping in to the passing lane. And so the Lakers have those ingredients too. They can be physical. They can be overwhelming defensively, but they got in a crouch, and they got on a crouch on both yes. sides of the ball. And I'd like to see them be more aggressive and more assertive and more physical. And against the Kings the last game, I thought the Lakers fell into the trap. They yep. said, you're playing a bunch of small guys. We're going to play small guys too. And I don't think they should be taking that specific approach. I think they need to be more physical. So why don't we go to break here? And on the other side, we'll talk more about defensive coverages, because I am interested, Pete, in getting back into the pick and roll stuff.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's done. The goal of the year, part of the past, the celebrations, forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, we're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This game, and we're going to get into the pick and roll coverages and toss it to Pete for that in a second. The Lakers just have to win this game, just period. This is forget the standings and all that, just from a matchup perspective.
An important game.
I think that yeah. it's embarrassing to get completely smashed in one quarter. And then the Lakers won three of the other four quarters, right? And they certainly went up by 19 points. We just talked about that. And Pete's going to get into the specifics as to why. But to me, this is more of just a, like, this team just beat you in your gym. You're in a standings race. They played last night in a back-to-back. They missed Keegan Murray, who was out with an ankle. We'll see if he's going to play tonight. Trey Lyles left with an injured knee. And maybe that portends to Sacramento playing more of these small groups. And I think that from the one point, the Lakers absolutely shouldn't just try to match that, which is not going to work, which is what they want to do. This goes back to the analogy of how Golden State used to sucker teams into playing a certain way that was to their style. And the Lakers don't need to do that because the Kings should not be able to stop the Lakers with them just playing and doing what they do. And this is one of those things where I will often ask a coach about the matchup, right? Like the first two questions might be, hey, one Laker question, maybe an injury update before the game. And then the third one is, what's the key thing that this team does that you guys think you should focus on? And sometimes coaches, including Darvin Ham, will just give you we know what they do, but this is a game, we just have to do what we do well. And sometimes that's true, sometimes that's not. I think that's what we're going to get into with this, how they're going to deal with the screen roll, especially when Sacramento goes small. But the Lakers' A game should absolutely be enough to hammer Sacramento. It just should. That's what I believed. It ended up not being the case once the second quarter, I guess the end of the first quarter in that first game. But I think from just a mentality standpoint, that's no matter how it gets done. So now I'm going to contradict that slightly by tossing to Pete for more on the screen roll action and something that certainly did hurt the Lakers, even if they were focused last game.
Well, both of you get at something that I think is really key in this. Darius, you were talking about how once the Kings get you on their heels, they've got you. And then you were talking about the Golden State, you know, style of once they get you into playing their style of basketball, you know, that you're in trouble. I think both things are true in exactly how the Kings beat you. They also are all dudes in their mid-20s who play every game, who like to run, who are super engaged every possession to possession. It's part of why I respect them and why I'm like, hey, they're a good team, is because I watch them and they play hard. And they are they're a team that they, for example, Malik Monk got teed up in the fourth quarter when they were up by like 28 because Milwaukee had been super physical all night on the perimeter because they couldn't keep up with them foot speed wise. So it's a lot of reaching and shoving and that sort of thing. And both Fox and Monk.
The Pat Bev special.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, the Pat Bev special.
Right.
Yes.
When you can't guard a guy, you know, one-on-one, it's all the dirty tricks. And so Milwaukee was pulling out all of them. And so Fox and Monk were just irritated the whole game. And then in the fourth quarter, Monk finally got teed up and just sort of his conversation throughout the game with the refs was very funny. I don't know. I just really like him.
Let me just give one qualifier. Please. The Kings certainly play hard against the Lakers. The next three games, they barely beat the Spurs at home without Wemby and got booed off their court. They lost to Houston at home on the same court the next night. And then they played really hard again against Milwaukee. So I just think, like, yes, they do play hard, certainly against the Lakers, but there are plenty of games where they don't have their level of physicality and get their butts kicked.
Great point. So let me pare it down to this. When they are playing hard in their locked-in games, they have a capability to sprint their asses off every single possession in a way that I haven't seen this Lakers team do. And it makes sense. Consider who our two best players are from a I like to run every single possession standpoint compared to Sabonis and Fox. It's two dudes in their mid to late 20s versus the oldest player in the league and a guy in AD who carries our defensive world on his shoulders. No shit, he's not sprinting up the floor every single possession, right? But the fact that Sacramento does, when compared to us, I saw the same thing happen in the Milwaukee game. Even, it was actually very informative watching that because, like, watching Sabonis in particular really body Giannis and Lopez and just the way they were going at Lopez as a rim protector made me feel a little better about AD. And it's funny because Sabonis's dad is one of the legendary international players of all time. He didn't get to the NBA until way after his prime and after a bad knee injury. But as I watch Domantas play, I picture dad Arvidas, like they're playing a competitive one-on-one and Domantas is like a kid or a teenager and it's close, and he just decides to back him down because he's 7'4" and 300. And yeah. Talk to me about Arvydas Sabonis real quick and transition that to DeMontis.
Well, he was just such a great player. And if you really want to go back and look at what he was in his prime, go back to the 88 Olympics and watch him basically destroy everyone, including young David Robinson, mm-hmm. who was on that that Team USA Olympic team. And this is what prompted the Dream Team to be formed.
That's right.
Is because all of these European players were pros. They were playing in the pro Europe leagues, and Sabonis was at that time looked at as one of the best players in the world. And if you would have said, like, who are the 10 best players in the world, and if you were actually talking to someone who was in the know about international basketball, Sabonis probably would have been listed in that top 5 or 6 mm-hmm. of this dude is unreal. And so now, so I will say this about him, though. He was 7'4". He came from a different era, and his game does not mirror the way that his son plays.
No.
But his son clearly grew up understanding this is what my game is going to be, and I am built out of granite. And so, like, my style is not going to be the fluid, beautiful game. There's going to be elements of that with the passing and the feel, but overall, I'm going to be a mule in the paint. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to deal with my physicality play after play after play. And one of the things that I like about Sabonis is that he is a throwback player to me, Mike. He is a guy that his game is straight out of, to me, like the 80s and the 90s. It, like, he would have played the same exact style back then. And he would have been a power forward, of course. Yep. And he probably would actually score even more points than what he scores now based off of, like, the illegal defense rules and everything else. But dealing with Sabonis is a very tricky proposition from an offensive standpoint. And the point that Pete was making about the ability to play at the point of attack in the DHO game, and because he sets such good screens, and then his hands to catch the ball on the move and then play with force and leverage beneath taller players.
That's a huge point. He gets lower. It's like offensive defensive line play. Yep.
Yeah. And so it allows him to get to spots on the court where he is just getting his shot up. And you could tell Sabonis is the perfect example of, I've played the same way for the last 15 years. He's probably played the same exact game since he was like in eighth grade. It looks like I've always been this exact player, and all the little tricks around the basket and the little jump hooks and the pivots and all of the ways that he creates space, these are all the same things that he's been doing, and he's like mastered them. He is a master of his specific style of play, and you're not going to get him off of his game necessarily if you play him in his style. And so if you're just going to allow him to get into the paint and not disrupt him early, if you're not going to disrupt the point of attack, and this is why the Bucks game that we were talking about that the Kings just played last night and the Lakers game that they played last week, it was the same game plan. It was bigs playing in a drop, allowing the guards to get into space, Sabonis rolling behind them and being like, yeah, what are you going to do, big man? You're going to try to stop the guards? Oh, wait, you're going to like faint and then go back to Sabonis? He's too strong for that. He's like Mike, you talk about playing Tecmo Bowl. He's like Bo Jackson out there. When you give him a free rein, he's just bodying dudes and knocking them off course. If you allow him to get a runway, he is too strong. And so I'm saying you have to nip it in the bud with him, and you have to do your work early.
Bingo.
I don't want to oversell his dominance or anything, but I'm just saying, if you give him all of the ingredients to be successful, he's going to be successful.
Yeah, man, you really hit home there with the Tecmo Bowl analogy, except that there's almost no player in any sport ever that's as good as Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl. however, I guess here's the analogy I would make. Like, if you call a run play and like you can at least be, have the personnel on the field in Tecmo Bowl to slow down Bo Jackson or Marcus Allen, if you call a pass play against the Raiders in Tecmo Bowl, then you're basically just giving up a touchdown. If you so yes, like you do have to be at least in the proper mindset and with the proper focus about Sabonis, which is what I thought happens in the postseason, which happened with Draymond Green and the Warriors last year and sort of how they dealt with Sabonis. And he had a couple of good games in that series, but overall, you know, he averaged 16, 11, and 5. And in the regular season right now, he's averaging like 22, 16, and 10 in the last in March. So like he is playing at like full playoff level, and not every opponent is treating it as such. And the Lakers certainly didn't treat it as such. And guess what? They need to.
Yes.
And the only thing though, and here's the caveat where I'm giving the Kings more respect than it sounds like I usually you might think that I have for them. If you want to deal with him in that way, then you have one guy that can do it, which is Anthony Davis, who's on the roster right now. And then what are you going to do with Fox and Monk in a lot of those actions higher on the floor? How do you do both? And what players need to help AD with that assignment?
Let's take a break and talk about that.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 nine-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
So, yes, AD can guard Sabonis to a degree, but the reason I brought up the image of Arvidas, the dad, backing down DeMontis in a game of one-on-one is that's basically what DeMontis does to guy. And like I said, I was watching him do this to Giannis and Brooke Lopez last night, where it was like, all right, this is not just an AD thing. You know, this is what he does. And he has mastered the art of just backing a guy all the way under the basket and flipping the ball over his head into the basket. And one of the things that is super, that I don't think there are enough stats on in the NBA is ball handling. And I don't mean passing or even making fancy dribble moves, but the ability to get to where you want to go on the dribble without losing the ball on the way there. And that's part of how Şengün plays, how Sabonis plays, and how Jokic plays, right? Where it's this very dad against his eighth grade son at game point type of energy, where it's like, all right, I've let you kind of hang around for a while, but now I'm just going to fold you up and put you in my back pocket and walk you under the rim and flip the ball in from 2 feet away, right? And so Darius's phrase of do your work early has been ringing through my head over the last couple of weeks. And that to me is, before we move on to the help and even the pick and roll coverages that we keep teasing, is that doing your work early, D, against Sabonis is it's a foot speed thing. It's an anticipation thing. It's a beating a guy to a spot. And that to me is the pivot point of AD versus Sabonis is AD's got to beat him to the spot more often than he has in these previous games.
Yes. He also has to deal with the guards. And this is what I was talking about earlier, that the Kings put bigs especially in this difficult to choose what's the best path, situation. And there will be possessions, if you go back and highlight them, against both the Kings and against the Nuggets, where you'll see Jamal Murray getting downhill, or you will see Malik Monk or De'Aaron Fox get downhill. And then you see Anthony Davis in the frame. And AD is like, what am I going to do here? Am I going to just pick up the guard? Or am I going to recover back to Sabonis? And one of the reasons why Fox and Monk were getting shots in the paint, even with AD in the game, was because he was recovering back to Sabonis. And what the Lakers need to do, and here's where we're going to get into the pick and roll in DHO coverage, is they need to protect AD's backside, and they need to force the ball into other players' hands. The Kings want to play through Monk, Fox, and Sabonis. And the beneficiaries of that oftentimes are going to be like, oh, well, here's Trey Lyles shooting a wide open three, or Keegan Murray or Kevin Herter taking a wide open three. And those can be, it can be a difficult proposition, Pete, when you take away the other team's best options. And then, oh, well, guess who went 3-for-4 from 3-point land? Harrison Barnes.
Yep.
And he's got 18 first half points because he was just lurking around like on the backside. But this is what the Lakers are going to have to do. Mike, there's a possession from the Pacers game in the in-season tournament where AD and who knows who, I can't remember who the guard was, trapped up high on Halliburton, and Miles Turner is rolling to the basket, and Halliburton tries to throw this sort of late pass to Turner, and in comes LeBron swooping in like a free safety in football and just picking the ball off and going the opposite direction. This to me, Mike, is as much a LeBron James defense game as it is an Anthony Davis in point of attack defense game. The Lakers have to protect AD's backside and allow him to be aggressive at the point of attack against what the Kings are doing offensively.
If I could just interject, the basic idea is freeing up AD to address whatever problem there is on the opponent, right? And against Sacramento, our big deficit is in our perimeter defense, especially. And Sabonis does better one-on-one against AD than the vast majority of bigs as well. So one simple thing is I think either Rui or LeBron needs to guard Sabonis. I would say Rui does. And I think that switching, I think it's a mix between switching and blitzing. But the blitzing comes with LeBron has to be super sharp on those backline rotations. It has to look like that Indiana play that Darius just described in order for it to work. And if it's not, that's a dunk at the rim, or it's one of those corner threes for a shooter.
So a lot of this discussion has been about how to slow down this Kings machine. And I think that the reason that I have been most pessimistic about Sacramento from last year and including this year is because on defense, just generally, they're not very good. They're now on the season, they're better than they were last year. They're 16th. The last 10 games that Darius was talking about with the Lakers are in, the Kings are 24th. And they don't have good defensive personnel. You know, that's the difference between them and some teams that just maybe turn it on and turn it off. And Sabonis is the biggest reason for that. You know, at the five, there's no rim protection there. And they also don't have wings that can really stop you. And they also, other than De'Aaron Fox, who's like, at least Fox is pretty good with his quickness and ball pressure, but he's not doing that every possession. You know, he's not completely like out there locking in, like in the way that you would think Davion Mitchell comes off the bench to do it. So I just see so many consistent opportunities to attack Sacramento and especially with the Lakers rolling an offense like they are, that even if they're not able to contain some of what we've been discussing defensively, they should be able to score. And they should be able to do it. And they had the one stretch that, again, it was that second quarter where everything just shut down and Sacramento hit, 13 straight shots. It is harder to score when a team is in that kind of rhythm. And just you're dragging the ball out of your net. You're not running. You're getting into half court sets that aren't as comfortable sometimes for the Lakers. But that still, to me, is where you have to beat this Kings team and where eventually most teams in the league do. I sent you guys a stat yesterday where the Kings are outscoring their point differential by the most in the league by a factor of two And they get some credit for that by being good in the clutch, but it also just shows a team that is going to kind of, to me, closer to 500 than they are to 10 games over, which is where they've been the last couple of years. So anyway, I wanted to just switch the conversation quickly to that side of the floor and think about how the Lakers can exploit what some of these weaknesses are that Sacramento has defensively.
I think you're spot on with identifying the weaknesses. I think Sabonis is okay because he at least is positionally often in the right place. I think their wings combined with Sabonis creates a real big problem. But the one thing I do think they're pretty good at is ball pressure on the perimeter from their guards. And so this to me is where your point, Darius, of get Anthony Davis the damn ball really comes into play a lot of times. Although he's going to have to be able to beat Sabonis one-on-one in his matchups to do that, right? But this is an AD and LeBron game in that if we are running our just pick and rolls through Austin and D'Lo, they can be susceptible to good ball pressure. And so that to me makes it more of a LeBron on ball type of game. So talk to me about that, because I think we played kind of right into the one thing on defense that they are solid at.
I'm so mad.
About what?
So no, you just teed this up for me. I very much appreciate this.
Do you want me to dust off the displeasure scale? It's been a while since that thing's come out.
It has been a while with the displeasure scale. I don't know where this ranks. We may actually have to have an actual Lakers thing on the displeasure scale, because this is one of those things. When Anthony Davis has an advantageous matchup, please just give him the ball and then let the other team react to the fact that the guy who we actually don't want to have the ball has the ball. And so against Minnesota, I was fairly frustrated with the idea that Anthony Davis was being defended by Naz Reid and Luka Garza. And the Lakers continued to say, we're going to run pick and rolls for Austin and D'Lo in order for them to be the central figures within the offense. And guess what? They run a pick and roll, and then everyone swarms AD on the roll. He's not getting any touches, and then it's the guards' chance to basically shoot and score the ball. And they missed, not a lot, but they missed. And Anthony Davis got more touches going to the offensive glass than he got traditional touches from someone passing him the ball in a position where he could create a shot for himself. The Kings are going to try to disrupt entry passes to Anthony Davis. This much is 100% clear. The Kings have coaches too. It's one of the reasons why they pressure the ball. They're pressuring the ball to make it so that passing angles get disrupted, so that the Lakers are not able to just walk to a side of the floor and just have AD with his hand up like it's the 1980s and allow him to catch an easy entry pass so he can go to work against Domantas Sabonis. But if a part of the game plan tonight isn't finding ways to free up Anthony Davis to get him touches at the elbow, at the mid block, at the low block, at the top of the floor sometimes, but less of that. One of the things that Sabonis does fairly well is slide his feet using appropriate distance against a guy who, against an opponent who the game plan is to let them shoot a jump shot. It's one of the reasons why you see him switch out on to LeBron in pick and rolls. And he actually does a fairly good job of staying with LeBron because he is allowing for appropriate distance, Mike. And so he's going to do that to AD too when AD has all of these delay touches at the top of the floor. So let's not look for AD only in pick and rolls and delay actions. Let's go back to posting Anthony Davis and working to try to establish where the post is going to come from. And maybe that is with LeBron on the ball and him being the guy who's making post entry passes, because it's harder to disrupt LeBron with ball pressure, particularly against a Kings team where they don't have the big wing defensive player to try to disrupt him. And so, Harrison Barnes is on him. That's not enough.
The one thing I want to interject, you're spot on with this, D. It's hard to have LeBron on the ball and be blitzing on the other end of the floor, because he's got such a backline rotation responsibility within that. So just something to factor in kind of more holistically into tonight.
It's something that you both said, and we were talking about defense, and it was about, well, yes, Anthony Davis, but the importance of LeBron, and he can be the one that can come over and make the difference. The game that I think stands out the most as to when LeBron decided on defense that he was going to win the game for the Lakers was against the Pelicans in the in-season tournament semifinal, when he came out and had like two blocks on Zion, drew a charge, and just completely erased him from the action in New Orleans. It's like, what are we supposed to do? He just broke that game defensively. And I think that this would be one of the games that, just given the standings, given that Sacramento, this is your last chance to make a meaningful gain on them in the standings. A lot of similar in some ways to the game at Phoenix that the Lakers lost a little bit about, where if they were going to catch Phoenix, that would have been the best way to do it, to get another win and to give them another loss. The Lakers have already lost the tiebreaker to the Kings, but that's just kind of awareness of standings and as the Lakers get into the last couple of weeks thing. But LeBron, this would be one of the ones, if he can do it physically with the ankle, that the Kings don't have a specific answer for him in any way, shape, or form. And even if they want to park Sabonis defensively in the paint and try to have Anthony Davis shoot jumpers over him, like, if LeBron wants to get downhill against this team, their ball pressure guards, he can just swat off like flies. That's right. And then he can get to the rim. And guess what he can do over Sabonis? Finish. He looks at Sabonis like he looks at Nurkic. And Jokic was a little bit more impressive than I thought in the playoff series last year, even against LeBron. And Jokic is bigger in that way, and or at least positionally a little bit better than what Nurkic and what Sabonis is. So LeBron can break this game if he so chooses, and if he has this game circled on the calendar. So I'm certainly going to be watching for that.
I think that's spot on, and so seeing him on the ball a little more tonight, I think, is something to look for. And so big game tonight. Lakers play the Kings. We are two games back of them. And yes, they have the tiebreaker, but still 16 games to go. We will be back tomorrow to discuss how it went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.